Welcome to Your Pharmacy Career Podcast, proudly brought to you by Ravens Recruitment, Australia's leading specialist pharmacy recruitment agency. The podcast series has been created to shine a light on the diverse and inspiring careers of Australia's pharmacists. Each episode will focus on the varied career opportunities within the pharmacy industry by exploring the career paths taken by leaders in the fields of community pharmacy, hospital, industry, government, and professional organisations. Careers never follow a defined path. Everyone's story is different and unique in their own way. The podcast series will help you discover the world of opportunities that exist and reveal pathways to achieve your dreams and aspirations. Whether you are a pharmacy student, early career pharmacist, or simply looking for a change at any stage of your career, the podcast series is designed to help you navigate ways into a career and a life that you love. Your host of the podcast series is Ali Su. Ali, herself a pharmacist, is now the founder of Global Pharmacy Entrepreneurs and a passionate advocate for pharmacists to grow, innovate, excel, and make a lasting impact in the world. It's now over to our host, Ali Su.
Welcome to another episode of Your Pharmacy Career Podcast, the ultimate resource for aspiring and early career pharmacists. I'm your host, Ali Su, and I'm here to guide you through the dynamic world of pharmacy, one episode at a time. Before we dive into today's exciting discussion, Ravens Your Pharmacy Career Podcast would like to acknowledge and pay respect to the traditional custodians of Australia, their profound connections to the land, sea, and community, as well as their elders, both past and present. We extend this respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. On today's episode, I'm thrilled to introduce you to Brooke Shelley, a pioneering general practice pharmacist from Victoria. With a diverse career portfolio, Brooke services as a GP pharmacist at Ontario Medical Clinic, a consultant credentialed pharmacist specializing in home medication review, and a senior clinical pharmacist at Beyond Pain. Brooke actively contributes to the healthcare community as a pharmacist lead for the Murray Primary Health Network clinical working group teams. She also lends her expertise as a subject matter expert to Health Pathways and represents rural pharmacy at government roundtable events. Additionally, Brooke holds positions on the PSA Victorian Branch Committee and the board of the Pharmaceutical Society Victoria. Her unwavering commitment lies in advocating for the diversification of the traditional pharmacist role, particularly in delivering primary healthcare to the 30% of Australians residing in regional, rural, and remote areas. Brooke's journey began with her graduation from La Trobe University in 2009, where she received the prestigious Pharmacy Student of the Year Award for Victoria. Since then, she has continued to excel, earning recognition as a finalist in the Rural Workforce Agency Victoria Awards for outstanding contribution to allied health. Over the past 4 years, Brooke has played a pivotal role at Ontario Medical Clinic, leveraging her medication expertise to optimize patient care. Her responsibilities include collaborating with GPs, conducting pre-consultations, reviewing medical history and pathology, and streamlining medication regimens. Brooke's dedication to education is evident as she actively participating in training GP registrars, nurses, and medical students in the field of chronic disease management. She is a passionate advocate for interprofessional collaboration and the integration of allied health professionals into primary care settings, nurturing and guiding the next generation of healthcare professionals. Get ready to be inspired as we delve into a captivating conversation with Brooke, a trailblazer in the world of general practice pharmacy. Let's explore the possibilities and uncover invaluable insights together. Without further ado, let's welcome Brooke.
Hi, Brooke. Tell us about your pharmacy journey. How did you start working in a GP clinic? Yeah, I started work in community pharmacy and managed community pharmacies for quite a while, and then went into a group development manager's role. And so that was overseeing 24 pharmacies across the state. And so that had a real operational aspect to it. When I had my first child, I did my HMR accreditation and we made the choice to move home to Mildura, and I sought out the biggest clinic in town, the clinic that had, as far as I was concerned, the best reputation, and approached them and said, look, do you have a HMR pharmacist? Do you know what HMRs are? And, they weren't sure, and they didn't have someone that they worked with all of the time. They certainly didn't have a process with their HMRs. And so I started with them there, and I did that for them solely for about 4 years. As far as I'm concerned, did a pretty good job and made some really great relationships with the GPs, and always got the reports back, always had feedback. I was obviously offering them a really great service. And so they approached me, actually, so about 4 years ago, and said, we've been approached by the PHN, so Murray PHN, with some funding to do a chronic disease management project, which included a multidisciplinary aspect, and their opportunities there were to employ a chronic disease nurse, and they were also able to allocate some funding to an allied health professional, and pharmacists were on the list of those. And because they had that pre-existing relationship with me, they knew that the doctors knew what my style and level of work was. Apparently a pretty easy sell to the GPs to have me on board, which was pretty exciting at the time. You know, GP pharmacy hasn't been around very long, and at the time they sort of said, oh, what is it that you think you'll be able to do? I said, oh, well, you know, lots of things. You know, pharmacists can do lots of things. What is it that you need me to do? And that's when we sat together and really worked out where their skills gap was in their particular clinic. And for us, it was quite clear that the practice manager didn't have a clinical background, so there was quite a bit that I could help with and draw skill sets from managing pharmacies. And obviously the medication aspect of our skill set was clearly lacking too at the practice. What most practice nurses are quite incredible, but some of them are really quite good in the medication space, and I think that surprised me a little bit. But then on the other hand, some of them really stepped back and didn't have much impact in that space when they did their chronic disease management work. So I was able to slip quite easily into that area where they had a gap.
For our early career pharmacists who want to improve their clinical skills, how would you advise them to develop?
It's really about being very strong in your chronic disease management. The difference that I find with community pharmacy is that day to day they deal with a lot of acute things, acute primary care stuff. Obviously, the medications that they dispense and counsel on are often to do with chronic disease, and so they're quite au fait with how the drugs work. But the stuff that I seem to deal with that's different would be a lot to do with pathology. So, and I don't think that's really well covered at an undergraduate level. So really getting your knowledge up with that. And probably one of the best ways to do that is to get your HMR accreditation, you know, because we look at pathology a lot in that space. And also learning how to manage multimorbidity. So dealing with a patient with multiple issues and how each of those chronic diseases intermesh, and how you choose to prioritize a certain, you know, organ in the body is something that GPs do quite well, and probably something that pharmacists don't have a whole heap of exposure to. And certainly something that I notice when I train our GP registrars. So there's doctors that have finished their qualification and then going into their fellowship to determine that GP land is where they're going to stay. And so they've often come from hospital, and they, again, deal with a lot of acute stuff. And so that move into the chronic disease management space can be a really challenging step for doctors and for pharmacists. So I think, you know, early career pharmacists would be really well suited to just get some years under their belt and just get hone their skills with patient counselling and rapport building and all of those sort of things, honing your skills and having a conversation with a GP, because I know as an early career pharmacist, that's quite a scary thing to do. I think one of the biggest challenges that any pharmacist will face moving into GP land is actually changing the perception sometimes, because a lot of the relationship or the pre-existing relationship that we might have with our local GPs is one where you pick up the phone and say, hey, made an error on the script. You know, we know that the conversation goes differently to that, but the premise of that entire conversation is you've done something wrong. This is how we need to fix it. It's really about making sure that you build relationships with the Jeeps and be able to have those tough conversations, because let's face it, no one likes to be told that they've made a mistake. It's how you manage those soft skills around building a relationship, communicating an error to a doctor and the way forward, whilst maintaining the relationship, is a good trick, I suppose, a good trick to learn. So I think early career pharmacists really need to think about whether they're ready for those conversations, because you have them every day in GP land. Every single moment of your job in general practice is conversations with doctors about, okay, no, this is the direction that we need to take this patient in, or, you know, this has happened in the consult that I've just had with your patient, and we need to do things differently moving forward. And so you really do need to have a level of not just confidence in your clinical skills, but in your interpersonal skills as well.
It is really interesting when you mentioned that being mindful of what other people are doing.
Recently attended a health workforce summit for regional and rural, well, for the crisis in regional and rural healthcare. It was a multidisciplinary event where there was all different health professionals in the room. Number one, I realised I'd never attended something like that before, and most of the people in the room hadn't either. So we really need to think about the fact that it's very rare that we all get together as a group of health professionals, not a group of pharmacists or a group of nurses and a group of doctors. And actually we realised, I was facilitating a table, there was sort of, 10 or 12 tables, and each table had a facilitator, and our job was to make sure that, you know, everyone was heard on the table. And one of the main things that came out of it for me was that most don't know what the other does. And that can really create disharmony when you're trying to build relationships, when you actually don't know what the skill set is. You know, we're talking so much at the moment about people working to top of scope, and I think it's such a trigger word for a lot of professions, when the reality is that we're actually just needing to work to scope. It's actually just our skill set that we have that so many of us aren't able to work to because of various different reasons, and a lot of those come down to the restrictions in regulations and remuneration and all sorts of stuff like that. But as far as I'm concerned, we need to be more mindful of what each health profession can bring to the table. And I think the general practice pharmacist role is a really great example of, bringing a skill set to a land that you're not normally in, showing them what you can do, showing them what pharmacy is all about. And I know for a fact that the GPs that I work with just had no concept of what I was capable of, and it took years. I've been there nearly 4 years, for them to really understand what it is that I can do, for them to trust in my judgment, and for them to really feel comfortable in handing over a patient and saying, okay, now I've diagnosed this patient, tell me what's next. Ultimately, for me, I think, wouldn't it be great if we very much just sat back down at the table and said, right, what is everyone's actual skill set, and what do we do day to day, and why is it that you're still doing that when I'm very capable of doing it? In general practice, what a perfect synergy of skill sets would be that the GP diagnoses and the pharmacist prescribes. I mean, how cool would that be? And I'd love to see that in the primary healthcare space in Australia in the future. I'd love to listen back to this podcast in 20 years' time and go, yes, that was exactly what we were meant to do, because we are the medication experts. The very clear distinction in our education between pharmacists and GPs is the diagnostics. Obviously, we're able to diagnose minor acute, primary care presentations, and we do that really well. But when it comes to chronic disease, that's their wheelhouse. Let them do that, and let them do that well, and let them have the time to really delve into the nitty-gritty of what's going on for that patient. And once they've figured it all out, handball it to me and let me do the bit that I'm really good at. So I think there's so much positivity in the future of where this role can go.
Well, I think the trust between you and your GP is really essential for your role. Yes. It's how to build that trust, have the confidence in you, your clinical knowledge.
Yeah, and I think I've probably just got to that point in my career too, where I'm no longer the youngest person in the room either. And so that's one of those things where, you know, now some of our GPs are younger than me. And so I've finally got to that stage where, and there's a really sweet spot in your career, and I'm probably not quite there yet, but where you've got enough experience in your role and enough life experience, but you're not that far out of uni that you've forgotten all of the basics. And so, you know, I remember talking to a surgeon about this, and that surgeon was saying you're about 60 when you hit that, you know, in orthopedics. But I think in GP pharmacy land, I'm probably getting close, you know, where you really feel comfortable in your own skin, feel like you really belong, you feel like what you're bringing to the table is useful, valid, respected, all of those things that I think doesn't matter what career you have, you're always driving for that space. And I feel like I'm just really starting to hit that space in my career, and it's a really nice place to be.
But this is also a great reminder to show our early career pharmacists, we don't have to rush, we don't have to be anxious and so stressed about not getting there. So you will get to your sweet spot. But yeah, during that time, just be patient and learn, gather those information, build these skill sets. Yeah. They eventually get there. Yeah.
I think too, you know, I definitely didn't know that this was going to be a role for me, but it certainly wasn't in my little 5-year plan. As I left, my initial thoughts were that I would, you know, own a pharmacy. You know, that was the space that I thought I'd go into. And for a variety of reasons, that didn't happen for me. You know, we made a choice to move back home, so to move rurally again. A lot of, you know, personal reasons why we made that choice. And at the time, for me, I thought that was going to end my career. You know, I thought that was going to end all of my prospects to really be the best version of me. You know, the role that I had in one of the independent pharmacy groups as their group development manager was really quite an exciting and big role for the part of my career I was in. And I just didn't think I was going to be able to replicate anything at that level if I moved rurally, and it just wasn't the case. You know, ultimately the move rurally for me allowed me to just look at different options, and I think, you know, typically the further out of metro, the more your skills are, you know, respected and valued because there is just not this huge pool of skills to pull from. And I think, you know, moving home to Mildura really allowed me to reset and decide what it is that I was going to do going forward. And HMRs was a really great thing that I could do as a mum. And, you know, it really means that I don't miss anything when it comes to my kids. And that was one of the things that was probably one of the major reasons why in the end I chose not to go down the path of ownership, because I know the stresses that can come with needing to be in the building. You know, if there's no other pharmacist, it's you, and the business doesn't open if you're not there. And I know that's a challenge for a lot of parents out there. I think it's a challenge for any pharmacist, you know, that's unwell or whatever the case is, that level of responsibility is really, really high and quite high pressured. And so for me, the choice then to go down the HMR route was a really clear one for me after I made the decision not to go into ownership. And like I said, I don't miss anything. I see, you know, every concert and every, you know, sports day, and that was really important to me. So, you know, although recently, you know, with my work in GP land, got a book full of patients on the appointment list, that's challenging too. So, you know, that's just a little bit more forgiving though, I'd say.
I feel like the two important parts to make this successful is, one is the trust with GP and education of other healthcare professionals. The second is that the funding, you said earlier, is that to be able to have that position within a GP clinic, how likely is that going to be to have more funding on these positions?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you have a really good look at the Strengthening Medicare Task Force paper that was released earlier this year, the underarching overarching message in that was multidisciplinary care. You know, that's the future of primary healthcare. And if the government recognises that in that paper, then they need to recognise it in the remuneration. And we're working very tirelessly in that sort of grassroots advocacy space to say, recognise what we do, you know, the GPs want us here, make sure that they can afford to have us here. And so currently we had the Labor government in the most recent federal budget announce a 30% increase in the workforce incentive program. So that's called the WIP, and you know, some pharmacists will be aware of that, others won't. But it's basically the way that we help fund, so not entirely fund, but aid funding of other professionals in a general practice. So typically the problem with that has been that that gets saturated with the nursing workforce, and that is more of a known commodity. You know, GPs understand what nurses can do for them in the practice. There are some item numbers that nurses can contribute to. You know, nurses, practice nurses, and also Aboriginal healthcare workers do form part of the chronic disease funding that we have in general practice. And so we need to keep working on government to recognise the work that pharmacists do in general practice. And we need to be able, you know, not only can we now currently access the WIP, which is great. That's a really great step. The fact that pharmacists are listed on the WIP now, which has been over the last few years. But the thing is, what we need really is that money being quarantined, I suppose, for GP pharmacy. That'll be a great next step, you know, so that there is money there that can't be spent on nurses that needs to be spent on pharmacists. So you either spend it on a pharmacist or you don't. I know they announced a 30% increase in the WIP across the board, but you know, the fine print on that was that, you know, larger practices will have their WIP funding maxed out at 130,000, and now prior to that announcement, the larger practices that announced that funding cap was at 125, so it really was only like a 4% increase for some of those larger practices. And the fact of the matter is that the larger practices are the ones that are employing pharmacists and nurses. So that, you know, $5,000 increase really is not going to make the difference between, you know, employing another pharmacist or having them there more hours a week. So the next step for all of us is to be louder. You know, we need to be louder and prouder and say we deserve to be in general practice. You know, we deserve to be remunerated. We deserve to be on the schedule. You know, currently we're one of the only allied health professionals that can't access the MBS in the chronic disease management space, which is not on. It's not on because, you know, when you talk about health, we know that one of the major initiatives that any practice has is to initiate a medicine, you know, and so that medicine needs to be overseen by the medicines expert, and that's the pharmacist. So the fact of the matter is, and I just recently was involved in a palliative care working group, and we were talking about, well, how is it that we can get everyone together, you know, because palliative care is a really good example of where multidisciplinary care is the only way to go about it. Is that currently with case conferencing, the pharmacist can be involved, but they're literally getting paid through altruism, you know, like you're not getting paid at all to be part of that. And a lot of pharmacists are really bad at putting their hand up and saying, I deserve to be paid for my time. I can put my hand up and say, I'm not so great at it either. But that is just not a sustainable way to go about improving the, you know, prospects for pharmacists going forward. So I'm making a choice these days to say, no, I'm more than happy to be involved in this, but I expect to be paid for my time because everyone else is being paid for their time. So yeah, I think the next step for us to ensure that this is a role for our profession is to make sure that there is a structured remuneration process. Currently, a lot of GP pharmacists are paid for through projects and pilots and trials and things, predominantly through their PHN, some through state budget funding, some through federal budget funding, but it is mostly the PHNs. But I think that the government really needs to put the money where their mouth is with regards to knowing that multidisciplinary team-based care is best practice, and so we need to be paid to be part of the team.
Last words you want to leave with our early career pharmacists?
I think it is a really exciting time to be a pharmacist. And I feel like a lot of pharmacists or generations of pharmacists have said this, but I think now is actually the time where things are changing. I genuinely believe that in 20 years' time, there will be a general practice pharmacist in every general practice. I genuinely believe that there will be a residential aged care pharmacist in every route across the country. I think that the embedded roles are a really cool space to be in. And I just think, please don't be disheartened by some of the stuff that's going on. I know that 60-day dispensing has really been a massive thing at the front of everyone's minds lately, because it does affect all pharmacists, regardless of the space that you work in. But truly, you know, recognize that unfortunately or fortunately, patients will always be on medicines and we will always be the medicines experts. So there's always going to be a role for us. And at the end of the day, no robot is going to be able to take the role of the pharmacist in making those decisions about the person in front of them. You know, each person is a unique person. Their story is unique, and our job is to be the one that listens to that story and makes great decisions based on that. So just remember that you need to work on your soft skills, work on your relationship building, all of that rapport stuff, work on your confidence, and just remember that you know your stuff. All right, you know your stuff, and always trust that you've got the patient's best interests at heart when you're having those conversations.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Your Pharmacy Career Podcast, proudly brought to you by Ravens Recruitment, Australia's leading specialist pharmacy recruitment agency. If you enjoyed this episode and know anyone else who you think would benefit from it, we would be grateful if you could share it with them. Together, we help even more pharmacists develop a career and life they love. If you have any questions or suggestions about future podcast episodes, please reach out to us via email, info@ravensrecruitment.com.au.